You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
They're maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here.
Well, welcome to Extra Time Radio here on a perfect Monday afternoon in New York City. I am, of course, not Andrew Wiebe. I am David Goss, joined by Matt Doyle. And coming up later, we'll have Jimmy Conrad. And, of course, as Andrew comes out, we bring the big man in, Ben the Research Bear, coming on as well. And Andrew's not here for a very good reason. The U.S. national team is in the semifinals of the 2016 Copa America Centenario. It'll be happening Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So Andrew is down in Houston. Doyle is out in what I imagine is very sunny and very pleasant San Francisco.
Yes.
And Oakland. Perfect. Right now.
Doyle, not that pleasant, actually.
Why not?
It was a tough sports night last night for the Bay Area.
Did the San Francisco Giants lose?
You are such a jerk. my Dubs took a giant L in game 7 of the NBA finals, and it was a great game, and I'm sitting here still kind of, and I know you probably feel the same way, just kind of in awe of LeBron. He had a game 7 triple double on the road, first team ever to come back from a 3-1 series deficit, the greatest defensive play I've ever seen. And I think, look, for any sports fan, like, to see someone ascend to, okay, now we're talking about at worst a top 3 player of all time,
right? The peak of what they do.
Yeah, the peak of what they do. Like, it canonized him,
right? The peak of what they do in the biggest moment, right? And I think, when I think back on sports, I think Zidane in the 06 World Cup, of guys that carried their team in the biggest moments. Let's do our thing, which is we take things that happen in the world and we act like they matter in soccer as well. Lionel Messi, I mean, people are talking, is he the greatest player of all time? And one of the huge holes in his resume is that he's yet to win a trophy with Argentina. And it's cool for me because I have that conversation with people and I talk U.S. soccer with people. And now those worlds are fused because U.S. soccer has a say in the legacy of Leo Messi. Does he need to win this Copa America to be on that level? Is he sitting in that LeBron place where all the pressure's on him?
I think it's both. For me, Lionel Messi is the greatest player of all time. But at the same, you are never going to be able to make that argument to certain parts of the fan base if he doesn't lead Argentina to a major title. And that means
three major finals that he's lost.
Right. Absolutely. And to be fair, I think he carried all of those teams. The last two anyway. He's got to win the World Cup or he's got to win Copa America. And this is his last chance in his 20s to do either of those. And by the way, Copa America is really hard to win. Do you know how many Copa America titles Pelé and Maradona combined for? Zero. Zero. This is a really, really hard tournament to win. And look, obviously I'm rooting for the U.S. If we get past Argentina and we win this thing, it's without a doubt the greatest accomplishment in the history of the program. But if Messi leads Argentina to this title, he gets canonized. This is it. There's no more, oh yeah, but he fails for his national team. This is Lionel Messi is a winner and a leader no matter where he plays.
So for the U.S., the big questions are lineups. Jermaine Jones suspended due to the red card has been upheld. Bobby Wood got a yellow card, so he's suspended as well. That one upheld. And Alejandro Bedoya picking up another yellow card. So those three are suspended. DeAndre Yedlin returns to the team after sitting out for his red card against Paraguay, becoming an unnecessary trend for the U.S. national team right now, is playing with 10 guys. Doyle, let's talk lineup. Where do you think they move this thing around? I mean, you got to think defensively, of course, is the key. I feel like you could put good money on the fact that Graham Zusi and Kyle Beckerman will start in this game for Jurgen Klinsmann. What do you expect to see on Tuesday night?
I expect to see a 4-5-1. I think it'll be Dempsey as a lone center forward, with some sort of mishmash in central midfield. I'm not ruling out a Kyle Beckerman, Michael Bradley, Perry Kitchen, central midfield.
You just gave me chills.
What's that?
You just gave me chills with that lineup.
Yeah, right. Look, we've seen Jurgen in the past when the pressure's on, he's kind of defaults to a 3D mid lineup. But I don't know. Maybe we need a better expert to come in and tell us what's really going to happen.
Let's do it then. Let's head over to Jimmy Conrad, former part-time host of this show, and we miss him dearly, at Jimmy Conrad on Twitter, the Jimmy Conrad on YouTube, and he's going to give us all of the lowdown. Jimmy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's been a while, so I'm excited to brainwash your audience again.
Yeah, well, we still keep the chair warm for you, so there's a chair here whenever you need a place to sit.
That's great.
And Doyle says that you're going to be the guy here to break down this U.S. national team game for us. The biggest game in, what are you going to say, Jimmy, 30 years, 20 years for this U.S. national team?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think that there needs to be some awareness that this is still kind of a glorified international tournament or friendly tournament, you know, and as much as I think it's a really meaningful game, there's still nothing riding on it, not a Confederations Cup berth. Not all that, but I don't want that. I'm trying to say that without lessening the importance of this game, because it is huge, and to have it on American soil, we've never played a game of this magnitude here since the 1994 World Cup. Obviously, we've had some World Cup qualifiers that were, you know, beating Mexico is always nice to qualify for the World Cup. So this, it just feels a little bit different than that kind of game, and you guys can agree or disagree, but it's still like it's still more meaningful, infinitely more meaningful than when these guys come over for a friendly and Messi jogs around for 30 minutes and people pay $200 a ticket for that. You know, there's still going to be something, some juice on this. And I think Argentina is taking it serious because they're growing like playoff beards to try to win this, to break their curse. So there is some merit to it, you know, that they are taking it serious. And that's all we want, I think, as a nation and as a team. We want some big national teams, some big club teams to come over here and take it serious. And this is the game that we want to prove to ourselves and to everyone else that we're too legit to quit, to borrow a phrase from MC Hammer.
Have we become too legit to quit just in time for this tournament in terms of finding a central defense that we trust, finding the right spot for Michael Bradley? And Jurgen Klinsmann sort of hinted this weekend that, well, this was the plan all along. This was how he wanted to change U.S. soccer. But is that the case, or has U.S. soccer changed Jurgen Klinsmann?
No, that's a great question. I'm sure there's a little bit of both, right? Where Jurgen comes in, he's done a very good job. He's vocal. He's very media savvy. He knows the right things to say. He knows how to tweak people, you and me in particular, Doyle. And I think he's good at that. He's good at generating and creating conversation. And I think he's broadened our player pool, and I think he's pushed Sunil Gulati to do things that Sunil never would have done in the past. So there's a lot of positives to him. But on the flip side, I don't think he was a good coach. I don't think he's a good coach. I think he's learned a lot during this process. I think it's funny that he came from an environment where there is always criticism of the national team and managers and coaches and all that. And then he comes here and he b****s about it. You know, what are you guys? You guys don't even know. So when he talks down to the fans here, I don't think he's taking the right course of action there. And I know he gets frustrated when he gets some criticism because he feels like he's God in some ways. And we've given him the position and paid him millions of dollars to be God for our program. So I think there's some pros and cons to it. And I think he has learned a lot. And from what I understand, there's just some rumors flying around that the players said something to him. I don't know which players, about, hey, you change the lineup all the time. Why don't we just stick with the same lineup for a few games and see what happens? Because even leading up to this tournament, he brought like a whole different team to Puerto Rico. Then he's changing the lineup. He puts guys in different positions. And I don't know why that all of a sudden just stops. And that was his plan all along, you know. And when he starts using phrases like learning curve, it just makes me, I got to stop reading. I can't take it, the learning curve anymore. You know, more like the learning curve, as you say, Matt, the learning curve for him, because now I think he's learning that, you know what, our guys do play best when you put them in their best positions. Our guys do play best when you get to let them run, have a few run of games together as a group. And I think we're starting to see the benefits of that in this tournament.
And so he's finally read his Charlie Sanders Pierce and opened himself to the great American philosophical theory of pragmatism, is what you're saying.
Maybe in some ways, either he got his hands tied by some of the players who were like, dude, got to stop with this shit. Or, you know, he actually had some realization from his coaching staff or for himself. Hey, you know what? Maybe I should put put these guys in the same spots and let them build some rapport together. You know, I thought one of his big mistakes in the World Cup, if we go back to that, was taking Kyle Beckerman out of the team ahead of Belgium. Because whether you're a fan of Beckerman or not, the guys in the back line had somebody in front of them that they trusted, and they knew how he moved, and they knew how he got protected the passing lanes, and all these little things. And when they had the ball, they knew where he was going to be for an outlet. Then he switches it for Belgium and puts Jeff Cameron in, and we give up more shots on goal than any team in the history of it. And that's not a reflection on Jeff Cameron or anybody else. It's just you change the rhythm of the team. And once he continues to tinker all the time, you can never build that consistency, that trust of how guys move in certain situations. And, you know, let's say, I mean, I love Pulisic, right? I think he's going to be a great player. I love Nagby, too. When you put him into the midfield, they're just going to run different. They're going to cover the ground different. They're going to attack different than a Jermaine Jones or a Bedoya. So there's going to be a little – and they have to figure that out in a meaningful game where all this expectation and pressure on them against one of the best national teams in the world. And that's if those two guys play, but that's just one of the things. And Jurgen was doing that consistently. You change the lineup consistently. You can never build anything. So – again, back to your point, I think he's learned a lot from this tournament, Jurgen Klinsmann, and I think our players have learned a lot too.
Jimmy, they have no choice, though. They have to make the moves. Three suspensions, Yedlin coming back. It's all anyone wants to talk about right now. Let's start here. What would you do if you were setting the lineup for tomorrow against Argentina?
Yeah, good question. So I would bring Yedlin, obviously, back into the team. I would push – I would keep Matt Beisler at left back. I thought he did admirably there. He's not a left back by trade. He's not blazing in speed by any stretch of the imagination, but he's got a good brain. For the game, he plays simple. He plays within himself, and he's got a good IQ. Like he makes good soccer decisions. So I think you put him at left back, and then you push Fabian Johnson up a little bit higher in front of him, and they can, because Messi likes to set up on the right side. So Fabian's going to have to do more thankless defending than I'm sure he'd like to, but that's what's going to have to be for the best interest of the team. So you got Johnson ahead of him, and then you have Graham Zusi ahead of Yedlin, and then you have Michael Bradley. And I put Kyle Beckerman in there. I'd let Bradley be more the Jermaine Jones box-to-box role and then let Beckerman sit in front of that back four. I know people, oh, Beckerman this, Beckerman that, but he does something for that team that I think is intangible with just kind of the trust. They really trust in his movements. He is such a team-first guy. When you have that kind of guy on the field, he holds people accountable. It makes a difference. And so I think you put him there to really stopgap anything that happens, and you let Michael be a little bit more free. I would put Jossi Zardes up high. I thought Bobby Wood has been excellent with this tournament in these couple areas where he's been running the channels. He looks to get in behind. He's stretching the defense out, and that's given Clint Dempsey a lot more space underneath the back four to pick up the ball and run towards goal, run facing the goal. Because when you put Clint up high and he's got his back to goal and he's getting, you know, his people kicking him from behind all the time, that's just not his game. He can do it, but that's just not his game per se. Now, the hard part for Zardes is I think he can do those things, run the channels. His work ethic's incredible. He's going to be a beast. As we saw in the Guatemala game, when he challenges for headers, even if it goes off his back or his chest or whatever, they still fall to people that are anticipating that second ball. Now, where Zardes is going to have to help us a lot, where Bobby Wood did excellent throughout this tournament, is holding the ball up when we're under pressure, drawing fouls, slowing the game down. Zardes doesn't have that as consistently in his game. So that's going to be a big component of it, because if he can't hold the ball up and we continue to turn the ball over, Clint's never going to be able to have time or to get into a rhythm to do Clint-like stuff. And then I think there's, what, one more position there? Who's the other guy missing? You have Zardes.
No, I think you had it.
Yeah, I got everybody, right? Yeah.
I mean, we could play
kind of up on the right. Yeah,
we could play with 12, and it might be a fair matchup.
Well, that's true. I mean, Messi does count as two people. So if they let me sneak somebody else on, I would take it.
How prepared emotionally are you for seeing a 4-5-1 with Dempsey as a lone forward?
I'm not that prepared, frankly. I wish at times that we could just go at a team, and no matter how good they are. And in this case, Argentina, which is a great opportunity for us to just go head-to-head with them, go toe-to-toe, push them, put them under pressure, don't let them breathe, and then try to turn the ball over in their half and make things happen. And I don't want us to play an incredibly high line like Mexico, because if you play a good, skilled, smart team, they're going to kill you. But not just sitting back on top of our 18 and hiding our deficiencies either. At some point, if we're going to get better as a nation, our weaknesses need to be exposed. We need to address those weaknesses, and then we can move forward. But if we always just sit back and try to counter, hit on set pieces, we're never really going to know what we need to work on, because we hide it all the time. We might even win that game, but it still doesn't show us exactly what we need to work on. So for that reason, I would love us just to, dude, guns blazing. Let's be all American about this and get after it, you know? Guns blazing is actually a terrible analogy. I don't want to ever use the word guns blazing. So I apologize immensely to everybody for saying that.
We need to know what's it going to be like for this team to face off against Argentina. Let's look at the other side, because as much as we want to talk about the U.S., I think Argentina are the ones that they're going to carry this game. They're probably going to dominate possession, dominate the opportunities. How do you see this matchup specifically working for the U.S.?
Well, I think you have to figure out a way to stack up Messi. You've got to slow him down. So whenever he's about to get the ball, and most teams try to do this, and some to better effect than others, you got to get him to make his decision with that first guy. He's probably going to blow past that first guy, but that first guy that's defending needs to push him into an area where that second guy can make a play, or at least make him play backwards. He is so good at playing forward. He always looks to play forward. He's looking for runs when he has the ball out on the wing. He can kill you right on passing as well. So you just need to get someone close to him and just make the game a little bit harder for him. And that's where I think Beisler and Fabian Johnson, or whoever stacks up on the left, is going to be incredibly important. Then Higuain has been fantastic. He had a great season for Napoli for Serie A, in Serie A for Napoli. And his movement and his awareness is really good in and around the box. He's just deadly. So just making sure we get close to him. I mean, it's just making this life difficult for these guys and not letting them do whatever they want to do. And I don't think we have any plans of doing that, but it's a lot easier said than done at times. I did see that Jurgen came out and said no, we haven't given up any goals in the run of play. But we've given up a ton of opportunities. I've cussed twice. I apologize. But we've given up a lot of opportunities here. And Guzan has made some big saves, you know. And I, as much as I say, yeah, we haven't, and that's a stat he can use and throw out there, I still – some of the quality of the opportunities we've been giving up haven't been good. And for Argentina, they've given up the least amount of shots of any team in this whole tournament. So as much as their quote-unquote weakness is their back four, you still got some quality players back there that are doing the work when they need to do the work. As you said earlier, they're going to have a lot of the possession. They're going to keep the ball. So it's hard, because if we sit too far back and we win the ball, and we're like, all right, we won it. It's great. And then you look up, you got 70 yards to go to try to make an opportunity. At some point, sure, we'll have the energy to do that as the game starts. But as the game winds down, that's where they're going to eat us up. You know, we outlasted Costa Rica doing that. We sat back for 20 minutes. I couldn't believe we sat back like we did against Costa Rica. But we end up getting a couple good opportunities. We finish those opportunities, and everything looks great. If we sit back like that, it's going to take us so much more energy to try to defend Argentina than Costa Rica that I don't think we're going to have that same kind of verve to go forward and to seem like we were running downhill in a lot of those in that game against Costa Rica. And I just don't see us having that same kind of impetus for this game. And we're missing a few key players that drove that Costa Rica game. So there's a lot to take into consideration. And with Argentina, I mean, for them, you know, if they can get into a rhythm, then it's going to be big trouble for the U.S.
Jimmy, you, of course, as a player, had moments where you were preparing for games against, you know, in tournaments against, quote unquote, bigger teams. And I think 2006 versus Italy is the best example of it. What is the mindset in the locker room? Are the guys pissed off that they're getting written off, that everybody is talking about how one team is big and one team is small? And do you play with a little bit of anger at that point?
Good question. So I got that game, the Italy game, and I also played against Argentina in the 2007 Copa America.
Yeah, I didn't want to mention that one because I remember how it turned out.
No, it didn't turn out great, but I think the mentality was the same and that game was 1-1 at half. And we came in at halftime of that game, the Argentina game, being really pissed off because we just couldn't connect passes. And some of the guys that you know are talented were a little scared, frankly, and didn't want to step up and didn't want the responsibility of that. We'd rather hide in some moments. And when you are watching Riquelme play to Crespo, back to Zanetti, back to Messi, you know, I mean, yeah, you get caught up a little bit in that. But that's when you need to be super organized. And I think what I love about this group, as opposed to the group that we played there, that was our first game of that tournament, is that they've had a run now of four games. It's been pretty much the same core of players. They trust each other. You can see it. They've got good spirit and energy and belief. And had we played Argentina in 07 in our last group game, I think that result would have been a lot different. But since it was first, we were still trying to get used to each other. We had Marvell Wynn starting his first game at right back, his first cap ever. You know, and that's just one example of some of the lineup challenges we had during that tournament. But for this, you know, with regard to preparation, I mean, you live in a bubble when you're at the national team. You don't read as much, and you probably shouldn't read as much that's out there. Everybody's going to have their opinions. I think our team plays better when they have a chip on their shoulder. Clint Dempsey is a perfect example of that. He plays better when he has a chip on his shoulder. He's been playing really well. And I think we love the underdog role. That's always been our role. And I know that Jurgen tries to downplay it and like we need to get past that, or we need to evolve past the underdog role. Why do we need to under? That's a great motivator, and we all are all on the same page about being an underdog. So, you know, I think we struggle when we're not the underdog, when we're supposed to beat teams that we're supposed to beat, and that's I think where we need to. But in this game against Argentina or against Italy in the World Cup, we're not expected to win. You're playing with house money, baby. So just get out there, have fun, enjoy yourself, and I think when you take that mentality, it takes a lot of the pressure off.
Let's jump over to the other side though, because after the U.S. beats Argentina, they'll have to see who they're going to face off in the final against. It's Colombia, Chile in the semi, but that's because Chile, I guess you could say, beat Mexico. I don't know what word you, Jamie, what word would you use there?
I would say steamrolled.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, wow, what a performance by Chile. I mean, obviously, they took advantage of all the Mexican errors that happened. Much as I'm a big fan of Juan Carlos Osorio as a manager, he does tinker with his lineup a lot as well, including goalkeeper. And some of the things that I was mentioning before with regard to consistency and hearing the same voice and how guys move, changing a goalkeeper for the fourth straight game is difficult, you know. And I know these guys are all professionals and all that stuff, but when you're playing against a high-quality team, you don't have time to worry about, you know, who's doing what. You have to know what that guy's going to do, whether you can hear or not, because if the crowd's too loud or whatever, you just have to know what those other guys are now. They're going to move. And so without Rafa Márquez as well, I think that they lack some leadership and poise. And obviously, as much as I love that Mexico tries to play out of every situation, there are moments where they get themselves in trouble, and Chile pounced. And it was a historic performance for Mexico. I mean, all I can say to my Mexican brethren is no mommy's way. So for all you guys that speak Spanish, you'll know exactly what I mean. I want to kind of laugh at sometimes, but then I feel bad for you. And I just feel like no mommy's way is like the perfect phrase for all this to bring some comfort and levity to the whole situation. But I thought Mexico was very good. I was in Phoenix for the game against Uruguay, and they looked awesome. I thought they were easily one of the favorites. And, you know, bad 90 minutes, and people are going to now write them off. And now they're going to have the underdog chip on their shoulder. So now we got two CONCACAF teams with a chip on their shoulder. It's not a bad thing. But, yeah, I think ultimately Colombia-Chile. Colombia, I was at the game against Colombia-Peru. I've seen them twice this tournament. They play okay. They've been solid. I don't think they've taken that step that they took in the World Cup in 14, where you're like, wow, Colombia's got that energy and spirit about them. They seem, I don't know, they just don't seem the same as then. And they, you know, beat an inferior opponent in penalties. Chile just rolled over one of the favorites, 7-0. Chile scored 4 goals in the game before that. They've got 11 goals in the last 2 games. I think this is Chile's to lose. I don't see Colombia. I think they'll be tough to beat and tough to break down. I like their back four, but Chile's got that momentum. And
no Vidal, though.
No Vidal, but yeah. Vidal, you got Vargas and Alexis Sanchez, who are on fire. They scored a combined 9 goals in the last 2 games. So I think they just need to find a player for Vidal. Hey, man, don't worry about going box to box like that, dude. Just get the ball to Sanchez and Vargas, and everything's going to be fine. So I think they're going to be fine without him, and they'll get him back in the final, and hopefully it's the U.S. they're playing against.
So, Jimmy, give us 2 scoreline predictions. Thursday morning, we wake up. What are we going to be looking at?
Well, my heart says that the U.S. are going to win 3-2. I'm going to be in Houston. I'm leaving tonight to get down there. And it's going to be the most epic Copa America game in the history of the tournament. And so the U.S. is going to get through, and that's my heart. My head says, you know, it's going to be a long game, and maybe it's 1-1 and we lose in penalties. I mean, it's hard not to look at it critically and think that Argentina has got us beat on paper and also in real life. I'm hoping we have that intangible, that spirit that we've shown throughout the tournament to kind of help push us through. That's, I guess I'll say, Argentina and penalties, like heartbreaking penalties. Like, it's just unfortunate that we lost, right? So we had a good performance, we lost. That's just hard. That's really hard for me to say because I want us to win, like, undoubtedly. And then the other one, I think Chile's going to win 2-3-1. I think they'll be in control most of the game. Vidal will be a big loss, but I think they've just got too much momentum right now.
So, Jimmy, while you're down in Houston, how can people follow you? Where are they going to be checking you out?
Yeah, so I'm working with a new live streaming app called Kizwe. Thanks for the shameless plug opportunity. Kizwe, you can go free online on the App Store, Kiswe. What's cool about it is it's kind of Facebook Live or Periscope on drugs. You can watch one stream. So I'll be on the stream ahead of the game. You can check out what's going on, breaking it down, be on at halftime and post. And then we can have three different streams. So we have another team that's in Chicago ahead of that semifinal. You can watch them too. We'll have another stream going. We'll have like three or four streams going on. And as a viewer, you can do choose your own adventure. And you can watch whichever one you want. Hopefully you stick with me because I'm the best looking, but that's my own personal bias. Also, I will say that they're giving this technology to throughout this tournament to Univision Deportes. So you can watch any game you want, and they have five camera angles, which is really cool. They have a bird's eye view one, which for me as a soccer geek is the way to go. And you can watch any camera angle you want of the whole game, or you can switch back and forth. You can rewind. You can clip out a thing. And it's incredible technology. We're still kind of beta mode soft launch, but it's been a lot of fun, and hopefully more people will download. So I'm just pressuring you guys to download now. Please do it. KISWE, Kiswe.
He's at Jimmy Conrad on Twitter. He's number one in our hearts. Jimmy Conrad, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. And hopefully we'll be, I don't know, maybe having you back on to talk at USA Copa America Championship. Sometimes.
Oh, that'd be amazing. I'd love to talk. I pretty much just talked you guys off the show. So
it was a good filibuster. So. Well done.
Make sure to follow Jimmy down in Houston. Well, he will give you the lowdown from the game. And of course, Andrew Reby as well. He's down there as well. What is the game, Doyle? What's going to happen? Give us a little bit of a prediction. Put yourself out there on the line. United States national team facing off against the number one team in the world in the semifinals of the Copa America. This is what we want consistently. This is why it was worth it for this team, for us to host this tournament. What do you think happens?
I think the U.S. take a 1-0 lead on a set piece and then go pure bunker, and Argentina get two goals in the final half hour to take a 2-1 win. But they exhaust themselves in the process and cost themselves a chance at the Copa America title.
So you think the United States ends up getting an assist from Chile for a Copa America back-to-back championship? Or sorry, the other way around. Chile gets an assist from the U.S. That's your expectation here?
Yeah. Well, no, I think actually Colombia.
Whoa! He's going down the road with James. I'm going to say 3-1 Argentina. I'm going to agree with you and say they take a 1-0 lead. The U.S. goes after it once they fall down 2-1, and Argentina nicks one on the counter. But you know what? They lost 3-2 to Brazil in the 09 Confederations Cup final. I think most fans came out of that, and they were proud of the way that they saw them play. And I think if you see something similar to that on Tuesday night, I think fans will really appreciate that. And there will be a larger acceptance of this national team than there already has been, which I think this tournament has done a large part of bringing the fan base maybe back together a little bit. And that's a little bit of you talking about U.S. soccer saving Jurgen Klinsmann as much as he saves U.S. soccer. Well, U.S. soccer, not the only thing happening. Major League Soccer is back. A huge weekend of action and a little bit of a midweek 2 preview. We'll be back in the second segment with, of course, the Research Bear in just a few moments.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I might just not come in, and now that Weeby's away, I'll just play Bon Jovi for 40 minutes, and that'll be Extra Time Radio. David Goss back here, Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XMFC Channel 85 alongside Matt Doyle and Ben Bear, and I refuse to light the flame under John Bon Jovi, the Philadelphia Soul legend.
Well, I'll take that for you. He has basically ruined a lot of TV just because his commercial's on all the time. I've left a Bon Jovi concert halfway through, so I'm not really surprised that something this despicable, he's doing something like
you
this.
You bought tickets to Bon Jovi?
My family went, and I turned to my dad, and we looked at each other, and we're like, let's get out of here right now. that's how bad it was. And so the fact that he created a song just for a commercial is not something that, you know, a supposed rock star should be doing.
It's ruining the summer. And if you combine the Bon Jovi song and the Cars for Kids song, you come up
don't go there.
With this song that just summons Cthulhu.
even bringing up the Cars for Kid commercial on the show may actually void this show and no one will be
that's
able
actually
to
true. I mean,
download
I mean,
it.
Being two hardcore WFAN listeners
yeah,
going
for
up,
sure.
we grew up on the Cars
God,
for Kid
my ears
commercial.
Bleed. So talking about that and ears bleeding and eyes bleeding, let's move to NYCFC Philadelphia. NYCFC, they said, could they rebound against the loss to the Cosmos? All three designated players score in this one. But before we get to the game, let's talk about Philly because they were first place in the Eastern Conference. And maybe their best player has now had to leave the team, Vincent Nogueira, heading back to France, terminating contract with the Union and Doyle. This is as big a loss as they could have had.
Yeah, I think it's actually the second biggest loss they could have had. I actually think that losing Sapong is, you know, for one game even, is the bigger one. But losing Nogueira hurts. Weeby wrote a piece on Friday after the news broke, and he put it pretty well. He's not their playmaker, but he's the guy who moves the ball to the right spots so that plays can be made. And look, Maurice Adu might come back within the next month, and he could do some of that, but he does it differently. And Roland Alberg might play more minutes, but he does it differently. And so it constitutes a pretty big midseason shift for what's still the first place team in the East, but a different team than they were a week ago.
To me, they just don't have a guy who can do everything that Nogueira does. They have guys like, I mean, Adu can be your number six. He can get in on tackles. He's played number 8 in his past, but I think at this stage of his career, he's better as a number six. They have a guy like Roland Alberg who wears number six, but is actually plays more like a number 10. He likes getting on the ball and doesn't really do a lot of work off the ball to me. And that's what Nogueira is great at, and also connecting all those passes that he did over the past couple of years with the Union. And they just, I don't think they have an obvious replacement for on the roster.
Right. So it seems like Alberg and Barnett are going to have to carry even larger load and step up a little bit. Alberg, we've heard of him as a number 10. You assume you can't move Barnett out of that role, though. So, mm-hmm. Doyle, you're looking at putting Alberg on one of the wings and just trying to get a little bit more offense in that team, especially until Maurice Adu comes back?
I don't know. Maybe the 4-1-4-1 that we saw in the second half of that game with Alberg and Barnetta on the same line and Brian Carroll is a lone D-mid. But guys, we're burying the lead here. I think the lead is NYCFC getting their second home win of the season and Frank the Tank Lampard getting his first goal of the season. Are they back? Is this who they are?
I'll just say I went to the game with a friend. We were sitting next to the supporter section. He turns to me. He's more of a general soccer fan than a hardcore MLS fan. He turns to me, goes, Lampard scoring 3 today. And he literally had 3 chances to score within the first 15 minutes. It could have been a lot worse for filling the first half. Lampard came out great. Villa was incredible. And I think the real star of the show to me, even though he didn't score or like create that many chances, I think Jack Harrison was amazing to me. Every single time he touched the ball, it fell right to his foot. The ball just stuck. He had that great elastico against Gaddis. I mean, he was incredible to me.
He's athletic, but he's also skilled, like you said. He also has pretty good vision. Kyrie Shelton's played out there in that position some. Tommy Mack obviously plays out there. I mean, is Jack Harrison? They traded up to get him. They wanted him, but with a team filled with DPs like this, the way they're aligned, is this the guy that's the linchpin for what they're doing, Doyle?
I mean, it's too soon to call him that, but he's got a lot of talent. That's pretty obvious. And I suspect he's going to keep getting minutes because he keeps producing. And look, we bag on NYCFC because their core, you know, they have some older guys in the core of that team, but they also really do have a lot of good young or youngish talent. Guys like Tommy Mack and Jack Harrison and Federico Bravo, Mikey Lopez is useful, Moderita, RJ Allen. So there's some stuff here for them to build on going forward. But I do think at this point, they're still more the team we saw in the second half of that game, the team that was kind of disorganized and really vulnerable defensively, than the team that they were in the first half when it was actually Philadelphia who were so disorganized.
Up 3-0 early in the game, so that's give up 2 goals. David Villa was furious at the end of the game while Frank Lampard was ecstatic. So those were the differing views on the end of that game for them. But let's talk about the rookies because we talk about Jack Harrison. Philly is team all rookie. Fabian Herbers gets the start in place of CJ Sapong. Keegan Rosenberry has been phenomenal. Josh Yarrow, their top pick for the draft. It's a pretty strong draft class, Ben, that's come out. Mm-hmm. I mean, we acted as if Rookie of the Year was over when Rosenberry started playing well. But now it looks like there's a couple guys who can be in the conversation, especially who's going to be the top three or four.
It could be one of 8-9 guys I'm looking at right. I'm looking at the board right now. You got Rosenberry. You got Vincent. Endo is getting minutes and producing for Toronto. Yep. Jonathan Campbell plays every single minute for Chicago. You have guys like Julian Boucher, who has come on, plays sparingly for DC, but I think he has a lot of talent, and I think we could see him more in the second half. We have guys like Saravia for Columbus, I think, who's going to get some more playing time with all the injuries that they're dealing with, and it the list goes on and on.
Doyle, is this the best class?
A lot of them, obviously, homegrowns as well. Jordan Morris is probably going to win Rookie of the Year. Yeah. Alex Mule has been playing pretty well for the Red Bulls. Zach Haravo up in New England. It was kind of low-key entering the season, but, you know, 3 months in now, this looks like one of the better rookie classes that the league has ever produced. Right. And I'm looking at, I think 6-7 guys maybe with international futures. Not all U.S. international, but international futures nonetheless.
And it was another year where we had the conversations, does the draft matter anymore and where does it fit and blah, blah, blah. And like you said, a few guys, especially Philly, taking advantage and getting those few guys who have really produced for them. It's going to be tough for Philly moving on from here. They have a midweek game, though, so they have an opportunity to rebound immediately against Chicago Fire, who we'll talk about in a second, because the Chicago Fire fell to the Colorado Rapids. The Rapids, all they do is win, no matter what. Am I right? Jonathan Campbell, we talked about a tough deflection for Marco Papa's late winner, 2-1. Doyle gets a goal, so Kevin Doyle back in the business. And
that's a shocker, a howler from Sean John.
That was really bad.
So is the howler just on the goal he gave up, or is it also the fact that he passed it out where he passed it out?
It's a little bit of both to me. I think it's more in, people get
– right.
The ball goes through your 5-0 every once in a while. I think it's more about the pass, just putting your –
You think the pass is worse?
I think the pass is
Doyle?
Worse.
Yeah, I think the – no, I think it's the save that's worse. It really is, because you got to – that's the number one job. As a keeper, bad distribution happens, but your number one job is to keep the ball out of the net.
No Gashi, no Jermaine Jones. Tim Howard hasn't arrived yet, and this team's still finding a way to win, still sitting in first place.
Eric Miller playing at center back, and they still – Chicago hasn't had the best attacking threats going forward this season, but they only allowed 6 shots, 2 shots on target with Eric Miller at center back.
Chicago hasn't won an away game in?
I don't have the exact date, but it's like a year and a half.
Well, that's a good time. New England Revolution got their first away win this weekend as well, but let's go to KC first. Sporting KC 2-0 win over FC Dallas. Doyle, I think controversy is an easy word to use to start talking about this game. A few questionable calls, one of them being a ball across the line. What was your reaction to watching this one?
Obviously goal line technology is I'm against instant replay still, but goal line technology is a no-brainer, and it's specifically for that type of play. There's no AR in the world who's going to run down that play. Human beings cannot run as fast as a kicked soccer ball. And obviously it was compounded by the fact that the AR's view was blocked by both the post and the keeper. I felt bad for him, but the referees are taught, if you're not certain, it's not a goal. And from that angle, it was impossible for him to be certain. Instant replay or a goal. Goal line refs. Add one ref behind each goal for each game, as we're seeing in the Euros. And I think the league would improve by 5-10%. I think it matters that much.
We'd stop talking about officiating for a while after all the hubbub at the beginning of the season. Fabian Castillo had an offside call that was a little questionable as well. There was a lot of controversy in this one, but it seems like it had settled down throughout the season. It's become much less of a talking point.
I agree. To me, officiating in every sport, there's going to be issues. We had definitely had a spat a little early in the year with everything that was going on. Things are going to happen. I'm a big golf fan. We saw the U.S. Open this weekend. That was one of the biggest fiascos I've ever seen in sports. and it just it happens.
I mean people were talking about the NBA finals like they're fixed.
Yeah,
so exactly. I think people are just going to complain about officiating no matter what happens. But I do think that there's a relatively easy fix with this. I think goal line refs help, period.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some player movement because we're a few weeks away from the transfer window opening up. A lot of teams, some room to improve. Seattle, clearly one of them. We'll talk about that in a second. But first, Columbus Crew SC gets a 0-0 draw with Montreal. But they also announced today that they're bringing back Dilly Duca, over 45 appearances in his Crew career. Early in his career, a couple goals. Is this a guy, Doyle, that can help this team out? Because they gave up Kai. Clearly, Duca is in no way a relation to that move. He brings some offensive punch, but we haven't seen him play soccer in, what, a year?
Yeah, it's been a while. Look, Greg Berhalter started Ethan Finlay up top as a lone number nine in this scoreless draw against Montreal this weekend. And maybe that's more of what's on the plate for Columbus. Maybe they're going to go to some sort of a 4-4-2 because with Higuain out, they don't have a true creator. And if that's the case with Finlay playing up top and Emil Larsson, the Danish kid that they brought in, looking like he's leaving in 2 weeks when the window opens, then Duca, yeah, he does have a role. And I mean, I've always liked Duca's talent, and he eventually got his fitness up there as well. I was surprised when he wasn't picked up this offseason. So he could help, but I still think that Columbus need a true center forward. Maybe it can be Ola Kamara. And I think that the window for Pipa probably closed. And he's not an elite number 10 in this league, and they need to come to terms with that. Maybe this transfer window, maybe next.
To me, another option might be, I mean, definitely over this next 2 months while Higuain is out, maybe push Miriam to the number 10. You can play Dilly Duca out wide. I mean,
yeah.
Cedric Mabwadi's on the roster too, obviously, but I think that's another option with bringing in Duca.
I would like to see that, actually. I like Miram a lot, and I don't think people outside of Columbus appreciate just how good and how creative he is.
And a lot of what he does is when he comes in field and he seems comfortable in the middle of the field with some wingers, that's not really how they play. He seems more like a number 10 at times than a winger. New York Red Bulls got a 2-0 win at the end of the weekend on Sunday night against Seattle Sounders at home. They now travel. They go to Real Salt Lake midweek Wednesday night, and then they go to Columbus. A tough week for New York. They're moving a lot of pieces around, but at the same time, they are one of three midweek games, Philadelphia Union, Chicago Fire, 7 p.m. Eastern time Wednesday night. Real Salt Lake, New York Red Bulls, 10 p.m. Eastern Wednesday night, and LA Galaxy versus Colorado Rapids, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Wednesday night, all of them on MLS Live. And then Tuesday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, first leg of the Amway Canadian Championship. Toronto FC with the kids getting through Montreal. Vancouver Whitecaps coming off a 2-1 home loss to the New England Revolution over the weekend. Doyle, who are you picking in this one? First of two legs, but who are you picking over the course of the whole thing?
I think I'm going to pick Vancouver to do it. I mean, Toronto FC, they have more depth than they have had in the past, but it's not a complete roster yet. Whereas Vancouver strikes me as something close to a complete roster. It helps that Kendall Lawson will be available and rested for this one.
Does it?
So I think that can be a difference maker against what will probably be something close to a B team for Toronto.
How much do you worry about the fact that Vancouver just creates chances and just can't score?
It's definitely a big problem. I'm assuming we're going to see Rivera on this game after getting the weekend off because of a disciplinary committee decision. But, I mean, I was also on that game watching the Vancouver game, and it was just Mane was playing really well. He was creating chances. He was making runs into the box, and he was causing havoc. But he couldn't finish, and nobody else could really – Hurtado was not really the answer. We've seen that over the past few years that I don't think he's really a starting number nine in this league. And it just – they need to find a solution either within the team with Rivero or when Kudo comes back or somewhere outside the team.
It's the same conversation, Doyle. Every year it seems like they bring in some strikers, no one finishes, Hurtado runs hard, ends up getting the starting spot at some point in the summer, and then they say, we need to get a striker next year. I mean, isn't it a broken story?
It's look, it goes back to the Camilo decision. They you know, they had the, I think they probably could have retained him and didn't. But the difference is this year they have in Blas Perez, they have a Band-Aid. And I think that he can, you know, help get them through a couple more rough patches. He's already helped them a ton. And if it comes down to, okay, we're going to unload Rivero and bring in a different DP, or we're going to make a trade within the league, they can afford to be a little bit pickier now in a way that they haven't in the past because of Blas.
I want to look forward, though, to this other midweek game that I'm interested in. LA Galaxy hosting Colorado Rapids. Rapids in first place in the West. We mentioned the names that still won't be there for this game. And LA Galaxy, I mean, if they're going to make a run, they have to catch up to some sort of first place in the Western Conference or Sports Shield. They're going to have to catch up to Colorado. How do you see this one matching up?
I mean, we've seen Colorado just doesn't give up any chances. And right now, LA, they're missing Robbie Keane. They're missing a couple other players.
Jossie Zardes.
That was the name I was looking for. And we saw on Saturday against Toronto that they weren't able to create chances consistently. So I mean, they really got to rely on Dos Santos getting in between the lines. I mean, I don't think if it's Horbury and then maybe they play Miller, maybe they play somebody else, but they have to get them moving a little bit to, and then get runners in behind like Legette and McGee, guys like that, to really create chances consistently.
Yeah, I mean, and that's if Dos Santos even plays, because he missed this one, and obviously Gerard missed it as well, the loss against Toronto FC. But I agree that there's, to me, the solution for Bruce has to be to play Jose Villarreal. He's a guy who on a per-minute basis, a per-90 basis, is one of the better chance creators in this league, whether you put him out wide or you put him as a second forward, or even the few times he's played as a center forward. He has a level of creativity that the other guys with the Galaxy right now cannot match, and he needs to play.
Doyle, we talk about the LA Galaxy Academy a lot, and they are the first ones to go with the USL team and all of this. It hasn't been easy, though, for those young players to break through at the next level. Zardes is a homegrown guy who's obviously producing. I mean, what is it that Bruce doesn't trust them? Is it just that they're constantly bringing in veterans that sit in front of them? What's the question there?
I mean, it's a little of both, I think. And to be fair to Bruce, Villarreal has spent a lot of time hurt. He went to Cruz Azul on loan, and Cruz Azul didn't keep him either. So there are, you know, there are some issues there. I mean, Bradford Jameson has been hurt and still doesn't know how to play defense. Jack McBean was given a good long chance and took a few years to grow into his body, to be honest with you. He was a kind of a gawky, awkward kid as a 19-year-old, and now at 21 is a different kind of player. So there are mitigating factors, but at the same time, the Galaxy have a real obvious problem. They can't generate chances from central midfield. And in Villarreal and Raul Mendiola, I think they have two pretty obvious solutions. And it's sooner or later, these guys have got to get on the field.
Well, last game from the weekend that we're going to touch on, but send you to our special episode, Orlando hosting San Jose, Orlando City SC, their first game at home since the tragic attacks at the Pulse nightclub. And they had some moving tributes and a memorial to those victims, as well as an attempt to help that city heal. And we talked to Phil Rollins separately, and we put that out as a special. So we want to direct you there, of course, on MLSsoccer.com or on iTunes to listen to that. And we get his thoughts. And, of course, everyone around the country and around the league stands with Orlando and United. So we're going to move on to the mailbag, and we're going to be back in just a few moments.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back here on Extra Time Radio, MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XM FC Channel 85. Here for the mailbag as we close it up. Ben Bear sitting in for Andrew Wiebe. How's that seat feel? Does it keep it warm?
It's Wiebe seats. I'm not feeling really too great, to be honest.
No? You're feeling a little shaky on it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe we need to build you your own permanent. I'm sure you'd like a nice homemade chair or
like
something.
A dent-esque chair.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. We'll get that done. In fantasy news, we have two winners, of course, from this week. Deuces Rave and But Is It Chaco, the top two scorers from the week. And don't forget, midweek games this week, so update your lineups as soon as you can. And there were a few other scores from the MLS weekend that we did not mention. Doyle touched on it. TFC 1-0 win over the LA Galaxy, as well as RSL hosting Portland in a what was pretty exciting 2-2 game, and Houston DC United 0-0 as well in Houston. As you can guess, that one was as exciting as you'd want it to be. But I got to pose a question to you guys, because Greg Ingram tweeted at us and he said, "I've got two tickets to the Copa Sema in Chicago. Any advice on what kit to wear? My MLS side, local team, no kit. Are there any rules?"
Well,
yeah, you never wear your club team to your country's game.
But it's not because his country. He's going to the one in Chicago. I believe he's a USA fan, so he's going to Colombia versus Chile.
Oh, all right.
I think that's his confusion.
Yeah, then rep your local club team then, man.
I subscribe to the theory that you never wear a neutral team's jersey at any sporting event.
Yeah?
Either you wear the home jersey, or you wear the road jersey, or you wear no jersey.
So my Pedro Morales Vancouver jersey at NYC versus Red Bulls would have been unacceptable?
Very unacceptable.
How does one stay neutral then? But also tell people that they love soccer.
You don't have to tell people you love soccer. You're at the game. That's telling people that you love soccer.
See, I think just by the act of wearing that jersey, it's no longer a neutral jersey, right? Because you're asserting dominance.
It's like I don't want to see. I've seen this happen all the time when I go to a Met game. They're playing, let's say, the Braves, and somebody's wearing a Yankees hat.
Okay, wait.
I don't need to see that you're a Yankee fan at a Mets game.
I don't care about that.
Very similar situation.
This is more baseball talk than we're allowed. I just want to ask you this question: if I am at an SKC game and I'm wearing a USA Beisler jersey, is that okay?
That's bordering. Yeah, that's probably fine.
If I'm at a USA game and I'm wearing a Seattle Sounders no-name jersey, is that okay?
No.
It's never okay to wear your club team jersey at the national team level. It just isn't, because you have in Seattle, you're going to have people from Portland supporting the team. You're going to have people from San Jose and LA and Utah and Colorado who are all flying there to support the team, and you're their rivals on the club level, and you don't want to put that in their eye. You want to be one. You want to be together for this game. So no club paraphernalia at all for national team games, period.
Well, Doyle is heated, and he is united. Ben Bear is stepping in. Of course, we thank Jimmy Conrad for breaking it down for us, because I think everyone's going to be pretty united. Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time, the United States national team facing off against Argentina in the Copa semifinals and with Canadian championship, as well as a lot of midweek MLS. And we will be back on Thursday to break it all down, Copa and MLS, and look to the weekend.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio,